Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is March 10th. I know that because yesterday was March 9th, which is the 23rd anniversary of Biggie Smalls' murder. I mean, people keep saying passing. He was murdered, you know what I'm saying? Right. I mean, and I don't say that to be, callous, but that's what happened. He didn't pass away. He didn't.
Big's been gone almost as long as he was alive.
Big yeah.
Was 24.
Yeah.
He hadn't yet turned 25, which is crazy. Which
And Pac was only 25 when he died.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't realize how young these guys were. These guys were, like, young.
I think I just realized that Pac was only 25 watching Evolution of Hip Hop. Because Snoop was like, my son is 25. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And obviously somewhere inside I knew that because we were young when these people passed. But it still is just when you're on the other side of the age, like looking back at 44, it's like, yo, they were babies.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. Yeah.
24 years old. Like, yeah, babies, like you said. So, obviously peace to him and his family. And, everybody who mourns him. And now comes the controversial section of the Pop Life Podcast. And this is just me. I'm definitely not putting it on bruh because he's Brooklyn. So he ain't got nothing to do with it. And I'm not putting on Nye because she's a music publicist, writer, journalist. Okay, not journalist. I got it mixed up. Music journalist. So it ain't on neither one of them. It's on little old me. And that is, I just think that, look, Biggie, obviously not to disparage Biggie, not to disparage his talent, not to disparage his work, because it was great. But he, unfortunately, only was able to make two albums.
Yes. You
know, I mean, you can make it, because I kind of stretch it to, you can really say one was a double album, so you can kind of say three if you want to do that. And then I put Hardcore in there, because he basically wrote the Lil' Kim's first album. And you can hear him.
Yes, like, all in it.
Yeah, it's him. It's like if Biggie was a girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'll give him the four, right? But that being said, he didn't get a chance to put out a lot of work. He also wasn't like Tupac or some other artists too that do like a lot of songs. Just kind of, what we heard is pretty much what he had. You know, it wasn't like a lot of extra stuff laying around. And I just feel like as these anniversaries of his murder kind of come, after they come every year. And I just feel like at this point, there's not a lot left to say. So then people are kind of just stretching it and trying to figure out another angle on figuring out something to say. There's nothing left much to say. He was amazing, but it was 23 years ago now. We know his work because, again, his work wasn't, there wasn't a lot of it because he just didn't have the time to do more. It wasn't, based on him being lazy or something. But there's just not much left to say. So now when these anniversaries come up, I just feel like, just say, God bless and keep it pushing. But these articles and stuff, it's like, what are we writing about at this point? Like,
no, I understand that. I understand exactly what you're saying. I think it's a fair point. Like, all right, I relate it to Music Sermon. There's a lot. So the listeners who also follow Music Sermon, you guys probably know by now, I don't talk about music that came out after 2000 because in the digital age, I feel like we've mined through everything in real time. Exactly. And when there are some artists that people ask me if I'll cover, and I tell them, like, I'll never cover Big, I'll never cover Jay, I'll never cover Pop, because we've gone through it, back, forth, up, down.
Sideways,
made up some shit, found some other shit. There's really, after a point, there is no
new to say.
Story to tell. The only story you could possibly tell about Big this point is something that has nothing to do with the music. It would have to be something about Biggie the man, Biggie the teenager, being killed. Mm-hmm. I don't, like, I don't even know.
But even that's kind of been covered, because, you know, yeah, we've had documentaries. There was, there's been a feature film about him as well. Yeah, so, like, it's like,
and that's, I mean, okay, but that's okay. Like, there comes a point.
Yeah, it's okay.
Like, every artist who dies, or the thing about Big, the reason people can't let go of Big, it's similar to Pac, but different. Like, Pac, people can't let go of because he left so much material behind, which I've said before, I hate that there are more, there's more posthumous work of Pac's out than there was work that Pac put out while he was alive. Mm-hmm. Which I hate, because I feel like, one or two posthumous albums, I get it, but, like, when you just keep churning out material that the artist made, and it's work that he made at a certain point in his career, so I don't even think it's indicative of where Pac would be as an artist had he stayed alive, right?
Or do we know that he really wanted that stuff out?
Right, so I feel like it does the artist a disservice when you put out that much material after their death. But on the flip side, though, it makes people feel closer to Pac, and it makes people feel like they know him as an artist. And it's part of the reason why people want to always act like Pac was out here always in keep your head up mode, instead of being a fucking reckless ass. Like, and I don't think I'm being disrespectful of death. He would say himself, like, he was courting death. Like, he was really kind of out here, like,
whatever, like, thug life.
Like, fuck all y'all. You running up on, you know, Crips, I mean, on Bloods and them all, like, whatever. But still. But with Big, I think it's the exact opposite. Big clearly had the potential to be so prolific in his talent, and he was so impactful with just those two albums. Mm-hmm. And such, he's so impactful on hip hop, period. But the reality is, we don't even know if Big would have kept recording. Like, Big might have.
Big was looking out the front door. He was looking out the front door. At that time, I mean, again, he was 24, so obviously a lot of things would have changed in his life. But at that time, his plan was to, like you said, there was talk of him working on another album, but his bigger vision was to really blow up his label, which had Junior Mafia and Undias. Yeah. And he was very early on getting he was going to do the clothing thing. He had the label called Brooklyn Mint. So those are kind of like his next steps. You know, he was like, I'm going to blow up my label. I'm going to sign more artists. His plan was, because I used to talk pretty regularly. His plan was obviously to blow up Junior Mafia and Kim, but his main person he wanted to blow up was C's. Yeah. C's was going to be the superstar for Biggie. Biggie was going to be like, I'm going to write this dude's album. He's got a lot of charisma. He's funny. Like, C's was going to be D1. And like I said, then they were getting into the clothing too with Brooklyn Mint. Which never really got to the ground, because he passed away before he, you know.
Well, D-Rock.
But there was a few pieces out, but it didn't really get going, you know.
Yeah, it was like T-shirts and velours.
A couple hoodie pullover kind of things.
I mean, you know, my take is very similar. And I think we've talked about this in the past, which is, I just feel like at this point it feels rather exploitive.
Yes.
Because we know it moves the needle for both of them. I do think that Big and Pac have, material aside, I think that they have reached a level of sort of iconic status. And I kind of like, I kind of liken Pac to James Dean, right? Which is like, you know, just live fast, die young.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot of material, but had this amazing magnetic personality and star quality. You know, handsome. You know, you still see.
And it seems like everybody who met him has a story.
You can buy a. You know, you can go into the store right now and buy James Dean posters and all sorts of shit and you know, paraphernalia and memorabilia. Mm-hmm. So I think I kind of liken it to that. I do agree that the difference here is that Big was really not courting violence. He was not, kind of going down that avenue. And so I think there's really a level of damn, why him? Because he just wasn't, like, that energy wasn't around him like that. And then I think it's fair to say, you know, that this was not a random act of violence. This was not an argument that got out of hand. This was a well-timed, well-planned hit on a man. You know what I'm saying? So I think when we start to put all of that in perspective, we feel at a little bit of a loss. But Yeah, man. I think, listen, it moves the needle. It gets the people going. You know, I vividly remember where I was when Pac got shot. I vividly remember the phone call when Big got killed.
Right.
Yep, me too.
And honestly, how Big's death really changed how everybody was moving.
Absolutely.
And if anybody's telling you they didn't change how they was moving,
they're lying.
You're fucking lying. Okay, yeah. That them niggas are selling wolf tickets and they're trying to make themselves. It was very tense going to the West Coast. It was very tense. If you left the Eastern Seaboard, if you went fucking, you know, west of Pennsylvania and you went, you know, maybe even south of you know, the Carolinas, anytime you went to those other regions outside of that comfort zone of the Eastern Seaboard, it was tense, man.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, I just wanted to say that, like I said, I have to reiterate because people be sensitive today. It's obviously no disrespect.
I do, and I'm not gonna go too much on this, but I do disagree with you a little bit in that his work. I think Big had a lot of material because you basically Puffy was throwing him on every fucking.
Or the remixes.
So from like 92 to 94, he's probably putting out 5, 6, 7 songs a year, which now seems like nothing.
Yeah.
At the time, that was an enormous amount of material. You know, you'd get your records, you throw it on acetate, you get it to flex or whatever, and they run it in the ground. So I do think that he had a lot more material than we actually remember, but I agree he didn't leave a lot in the vault because I just don't think that was his nature. Like I think he loved what rap did for him and he was really good at it. I don't think he loved rap. Like I kind of liken it to like a Dwight Howard. Like he's really great at basketball. But does he love basketball? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
he loves what basketball brings to him, the money.
And he enjoys it. I'm good at it, right? Yeah. Like I can really do this shit, and it's providing a lifestyle that I couldn't really acquire anywhere else.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. So I mean, since we on this, I want to jump real quick into the new season of Unsung started. There's been 3 episodes so far. It was it's been Drew Hill, Roxanne Shanté, and this week was Christopher Williams. And I mean, you know, we're fans of Unsung. They do a really good job. I don't think I told y'all, but I taped on the Mystical episode, which will be on later this season.
Oh,
taped it like 2-3 weeks ago. I don't know when it's coming on. Yeah. But you know, they do a really good job. They make, you know, and they make, you know, make it interesting. The Drew Hill joint was wild.
I had no idea all that was going on. I wasn't even paying attention like that.
Who?
What the
fuck? But you know, Baltimore, it's Baltimore, DC, because Hakez Amma is a DC cat and Hiram Hicks is a Philly cat. You kind of mix those 3 mentalities together, you get that. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a Cisco episode, but I felt almost like they not skipped over, but they didn't really show like how big Cisco was as a solo artist. Like he was like that album sold 5 million copies.
It did,
and Thong Song was like
the thong was like
Happy was for Pharrell. Like it was everywhere.
The Thong Song created up. I just got it segue for a second. I have a minor rant about Thong Song. I went into this on Twitter. The Thong Song, if I never hear that song a fucking again, it'll be too slow. Because here's the thing. Because Baby chimed in and she was like, I love the Thong Song. The song is fine only because Cisco's voice is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
But the song, so he makes the song good. The song itself is stupid. But in the moment, I was like 22, 23. If you were a young woman and you were outside when this song was out, It was so many thong song contests. Every fucking club, every fucking weekend.
I forgot about that.
Thong song contest.
I forgot about that.
The all contest. Kinds of people in thongs that we need in thongs.
Yeah, you didn't really need to wear that thong.
And it turned the thong into like a thing. Like sometimes you just don't want panty lines and your little lycra and fucking jersey knit clothes that we were wearing at the time. But like you be dancing with a dude and he's trying to like strategically place his hands to check.
See if you got the thong on.
He'd be like, you got a thong on. And it was like, they thought the shit meant something. Like, no, nigga. Like, it turned the thong into such a thing. It was annoying.
It took a piece of drawers and made it into this sexual invitation.
Like, who's he wearing a thong? And if they didn't know, they'd be like, why you ain't got a thong? Like, nigga, it's underwear. Like, it's not an invitation. I don't have thongs. That's not having on my mind when I put this shit on. Obviously, yeah.
It don't mean I'm a freak or like I'm a whore.
Yeah, it's some drawers, nigga.
Like, like, it was so annoying for like a couple years. It was just like, but also, like, it's amazing that he made that. And it was like the most TRL video ever.
Oh my God, ever.
Y'all can chime in on this. I heard dudes saying they were so mad because there was like no real ass in the video. It's like Cisco, like walking over a bunch of co ed MTV break teens instead of it being like.
It was definitely nobody had a dump truck in that video. I will say that there were no dump trucks.
No,
because young Sean was absolutely looking for the dump truck in that video. Because I knew for sure, I was like, "Oh, they ain't down in Miami. Oh, nigga, it's going to be popping."
Yeah.
And it wasn't. But I get it. They were also looking for a very certain aesthetic, and at the time. That's what it was, right? Like, if you was trying to go pop, if you was trying to really get that crossover, your visual had to coincide with that energy. I mean, I think that they did that. I think that they did it particularly on purpose, Jeff, with not going too heavy into Cisco as a solo artist. Because I think there's still so much tension, and I think he is so self-conscious about not wanting to relive that tension that he probably asked specifically.
Yeah, like overshadowing the group.
You know, don't ignore it, but like, let's just kind of gloss over it. We don't want to make it the group thing because that wasn't a group thing.
I've met Cisco a couple times over the years. I don't know him at all. Right. I don't claim to know him. But it doesn't mean anything that I met him because it was so brief, but like I just never got the vibe from watching them that he was like, yeah, I'm the star of the group.
Yeah,
he's kind of like, yeah, I mean, I sing and like I really enjoy, performing and dancing, but like I don't think he was on some like, he wasn't Eddie Kane.
Well, yeah, he didn't have, I don't think he had the ego, and I also think we never really think about how big Cisco's solo career was because first of all the thong song overshadowed everything else on that fucking album.
Yeah.
Even though he had some bangers on that shit.
Yeah, that first album, the Into the Dragon album, was good.
Yeah, and then like none of the albums made the. I think he did what, one other solo album. It just didn't make the same noise.
One, maybe two. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think what happened was Cisco's solo album came out right about a time where Cisco's brand of frontman was going out of style. The leather and the platinum hair.
I definitely feel like that. I feel like that really, when you saw pop culture shift with the jazz and the 50s and this sort of rough and tumble kind of dude, you know, the 5'3" dude with the platinum hair, you know, jumping all over the place, just was not
spinning.
Moving. Yeah. It just wasn't moving the needle in the same way, you know, and also, at that time, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know when the 8701 can't come out. Cause I know that
there was, 2001.
Yeah,
was
well,
that 2001?
August 7, 2001. That's why we named it 8701.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, duh. Yeah.
Nigga, I just knew it was popping. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of, I just think that the whole, and like you said, the idea of a male solo artist and the look and the swag and all of that shit just you know, it really kind of passed, him by really quick. So
yeah,
you know,
also, and then they did Roxanne Shanté, which you know,
I watched that one because why.
Yeah, because we kind of know all of this.
Sean has hands up. Yeah,
bro. Go ahead, bro. Go ahead, bro. Your turn.
Okay. So, a couple of things we want to talk about, and I'm going to take your sentiment that you had about Big, and I'm really going to apply that to Roxanne. And the way people wax poetic about Roxanne Shanté and her as a rapper,
yeah,
is like. Listen, I know I was very young, but I never got that from her.
Yeah, like she's the best female rapper ever.
Was there a space for her? Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was there this, you know, amazing, you know, talent that was honed? Nah, not really. And she says as much. She says in this episode how, you know, I'm a battle rapper and I would go into the studio and I would just write stuff and I'd be out in like 15 minutes. And yeah. I'm saying to myself, yes, we know.
We can tell. We can
absolutely tell you were in and out of there in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
And here's my second thing and my bigger issue. The lying about the doctorate degree.
Yeah. They skimmed over that shit crazy.
And honestly, to say in this particular unsung that it was basically a typo. So what she's saying here is that there was a school that had her speaking that used the word doctor, and she just ran with it and she didn't correct them.
Yeah, she just said I just ran with it. They corrected it, and then everybody started saying her stories, and everybody started saying it, and I was just like, cool.
Yeah,
I didn't believe that shit at all. I'm like, come on.
But that's not only is it not believable, it's factually incorrect.
Because she said she went to Columbia.
Yeah, she said, did she say like Leor gave her the money?
Somebody nigga.
She said Warner Brothers paid for her college.
She not just that. She came up with a entire backstory about how when she signed that she was a minor and there was a clause in her contract, and the clause said they would pay for her to go to school. The word school was never specified, which was why she was able to continue going and getting higher education degrees.
Always get a PhD
on Warner Brothers' dime, and Warner Brothers never set the record straight. Why? Because guess who looks good in that story? Warner Brothers,
Warner Brothers.
So it was of no consequence to them, right? And so eventually they did release a statement, and the reality was she was never signed directly to Warner Brothers. Her deal was with Cold Chillin' and Cold with Marley. Chillin'.
Yeah, and Pop Art, which is the Goodman Brothers from Philly.
Yeah.
Who you did not want problems with at all.
Yeah, anytime you hear some niggas named the Brothers, the Goodman Brothers, you don't want no problems with them kind of niggas.
The Huggins Brothers, the Lawrence and I forget the other Goodman's name, Dana. Lawrence and Dana Goodman, them dudes, you don't want no issues with them. But I didn't like how she kind of skimmed over that. And then in this documentary, you come find out that after she left rap, she moved to Newark, New Jersey. I think where she still lives. And she was just working in Newark. Which, I mean, and I'm not saying that in a negative thing, but like, so like, just be that. Like, all this this doctor thing, it was, and I'm sure like a lot of these schools feel duped because it's like, yo, we paid you, and we paid you as a, thinking you're a PhD, so we paid you probably more than we would have paid you anyway, and you was lying.
You know, look, listen, man, if you're going to give me the money,
and I could
fudge a little bit, to get an extra $5,000, fuck it. You know, the schools didn't do their due diligence anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, am I tripping? I'm just bugging on the fact that you're standing in this. Like, you're trying to make this something that it's not. Instead of just saying, yo, speaking engagements was putting food on the table.
Yep.
By saying this, I was able to get more and get more money, and I ran with it. I could respect. And listen, let me just preface. You know, she don't owe me nothing. So she ain't got to do, you know, whatever floats her boat. My point is like, it's not accurate. So let's not make it seem like that. And, you know, the albums and the music part of the career, it's like, yo, you went from 86 to 89 with, like, nothing happening.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was just major gaps in your life. And, sure, the personal stuff also impeded that. I'm sure sexism impeded that. I'm sure being an uneducated, young, you know, black girl with no support system as a family also didn't help her in her career. And I think that that story should have been told.
The other thing that threw me was, that was kind of like word was, she, mentioned in this piece, in this show that she's felt, underappreciated by a lot of the female rappers of, especially of her era and her day. They, she said, you know, they don't ever mention me the way they mention Latifah and Light and, you know, Yo-Yo, Salt Pepper. No, but check it out, though. But then I totally forgot about this. The last song she ever made, I forget the name of it now. Damn it. They said
Big Mama. Big Mama's
Big Mama. Bag. Big Mama's Bag. Big Mama's Thing or something like that. She crazy dissed every female rapper in that song. She dissed Light. She dissed Latifah. She dissed Salt and Pepper. She dissed Yo-Yo. And they had Yo-Yo on the show. And Yo-Yo was like, yo, we had, like, literally just hung out. Like, I thought we were cool. Right. And then this record comes out, and I call her, like, yo, like, what's up with this? And, you know, the rock, Shantae is like, yo, it's just hip-hop. It's just hip-hop. And Yo-Yo's like, but Yo-Yo's kind of like, yeah, but damn, Shorty, like, I thought we were friends. Like, why would you, and she's, you know, why would you say Yo-Yo got, like, a fake ass? And, you know, it was like battle rap diss, so it was pretty hardcore. So, I think that's also why her place is kind of like in a weird space because like she's like an outlier. She's like over there,
right?
Because while all the other female rappers are kind of like, you know.
Well, I guess because she came out of the battle rap era, and while Light and Yo and them and Latifah were coming up, it was more like
making songs.
We're not gonna go at each other.
Yeah. But she said basically like I knew this was the last song I was gonna make, so I was gonna go out with a bang. Fuck it, I'm just gonna shit on everybody.
And that's why they
don't. That. And then the third one, and then we'll move on. The third episode so far was Christopher Williams.
The light skinned god.
I got my hand up now.
No, you go now. Nah, you go.
So here's the thing. Y'all know I consider myself an unofficial Uptown Records expert, but I did not realize that was why Chris's career ended, because he was wilding the fuck out.
I remember that. I totally remember because me and Jimmy Jenkins used to be really cool. Like,
Jimmy was still mad. Motherfucker. All right.
Yo, I'm going to tell you why I'm laughing.
Be on site if Jimmy see Chris.
Yo, as soon as I saw that nigga with the shades on, I said, I know Jeff. I said, I could see them niggas right now hanging out uptown. I know he know this nigga.
Talking shit. Yeah, hey, I love Jimmy. I just haven't seen him in quite a long time, but I love Jimmy, man.
These niggas was in the shark bar in the corner.
Yeah, no, dead ass. That was Jimmy. Right. Jimmy used to have a barbershop right across the street from where Def Jam used to be on 8th Avenue and 50, whatever, in the Polygram building. Jimmy got out of barbershop over there, so like he had it lit because everybody from the music industry would go there to get their hair cut and hang out. Like Jimmy, but Jimmy is like a promotions guy. He's like a promotions legend. Like Jimmy, Jimmy's a mess, man.
But the thing that struck me about Chris, because Chris is one of those voices where I always do say that Chris should have had a bigger, longer career.
I agree.
But the thing that struck me about Chris is that he still seems to think he's a victim instead of just,
yes,
I
was blackballed.
In the fuck, like,
I was blackballed.
You destroyed The Office not over lack of promotion, not over they shelved your album, not over, but because your song didn't make it on the final Unsung edit.
But the thing is, like, he was on the Unsung edit.
Unplugged.
He did make it. It just wasn't the song he wanted.
Right.
I still wouldn't accept it, but I would understand a little better if he didn't make it at all.
Right.
You made it. It just wasn't the record you wanted.
You threw a couch through the partition, banged up the, like, my nigga, there's no part of you that can think that made sense. There's no, he was like, I'm not, because you feel like you're not getting respected because the song you wanted on TV didn't make it, like, the whole shit.
You tear up the CEO's office, and then you tear up Jimmy's office. I remember Jimmy's, kind of at the time, but very high up, and Jimmy was managing him.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like you tear up your man's office, like, too. Like, what are you?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's still like, oh, because of the Uptown shit, follow me. Like the one thing I will say I support him on is the fact that that Holly shit definitely hung over him. And I remember him saying it was Wes, it wasn't me. But to this day, a lot of people are like, oh, he fucked Holly Berry's hair.
Yeah.
So that definitely followed him. I remember that. But like, you're not blackballed, man. You're a volatile artist, and you weren't big enough yet to be that.
Absolutely.
Yes. And you know, looking at him and watching this, what I noticed was that
he looks cracky.
He doesn't look good. You know, Chris is of a certain age, right? So I don't want to make it seem like he's supposed to be the nigga that we saw in New Jack City.
Yeah.
Right. But he doesn't look good. You know what I'm saying? And when you compare him to dudes like the Canes out there and other niggas his age that are outperforming.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like Chris, he has an amazing voice. He had an amazing presence. And here's the thing, man. Chris fucking knew it. And he took full advantage of every opportunity and chance he could with that situation. And guess what, man? When it didn't work out, you had a ton of burnt bridges, okay? I don't for one second believe. And Andre said something very, very poignant, man. Like, if Uptown can't work for you.
Yeah.
Nigga, there's no like
if the hood label with the hood niggas and the hood business practices can't work with you.
Yeah, like you could go to a major and get it.
That's
off?
Ultimately right. That's what he was saying. If this building don't get you, if this building don't understand you,
nigga label can't get you.
if this nigga label can't work this out, then I don't know what's gonna happen when you go into these corporations and they're gonna try and that's basically what happened. He goes over. He gets another deal. He's basically on, ultimately, a fucking rock label. You know what I'm saying? And like,
The rock label was first.
I'm sorry. Yes.
He went to the last one was
Giant.
Giant. Yeah, but with everything's off.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so he says, you know, he's got the best deal. But again, you know, we always talk about this, like your best deal is not the best home for you.
Exactly.
Right. It's not always, it doesn't always, you have to take a lot of different things into consideration. And I also think, Chris didn't have, when you really think about it, I mean, Chris really has like, you know, five songs, six songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not, that's not a mountain of material to still be able to tour and go on the road with.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why we always joke about every summer there's a new new edition at going out on the road.
Yeah.
Because these niggas got albums. And they got albums. And they got hits.
They got catalog.
And yeah.
They got tangents of albums.
They could literally just do, we just going to do the Any Heartbreak album.
Yeah.
Word.
Sold out. No problem.
Good, yeah.
BBD literally just tours the Poison album.
Yes, they should.
That's it. Know? They just, like, yeah. I mean, sometimes they did it 25th anniversary, 30th anniversary, like, we just going to do the Poison album, that's it. They can do that.
And they can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was, you know, God bless you, Chris. Yeah, you fucked yourself over, though, man. I want to mention real quick, I went to see The Invisible Man last week.
Okay, that's the joint with Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Moss, exactly.
It looks good. Is it good?
It was pretty good. I mean, bro would never see it because he don't like the type of movies. But you know, I'm a sci-fi thriller kind of guy. I wouldn't say like run to the theater to see it kind of thing, but it was pretty good. Like, I had a couple little twists and turns. It also had a lot of parts that just, it was like, come on, bro, that don't make no sense. But like, on just like a go bug out, watch it. I enjoyed it. I guess spoiler alerts. This time, you know, usually the Invisible Man movies was based on him being like shot with something, like on his body kind of turns invisible. This time is based on this guy being supposed to be like this like super, you know, tech guy who's the best, one of the smartest guys in the world who works with optics. So he built a suit that can use optics to make him be invisible. So he's not like actually invisible, like, and once he takes the suit off, you can see him. So But yeah, it was like kind of like a lot of little slick shit, the way the camera work was done and stuff, that was super fly. Like, it was a lot of time, especially early in the movie. The first 30 minutes of the movie is like really excellent, because there's definitely things, it's like they don't show him or they don't, but it's like little things. It's like, I think somebody's in that room with her, you know, that kind of thing. Or like something will fall off the table, or it'd be like, wait, what? Like, you know, it was kind of like, it was, the first 30 minutes or so were excellent. Yeah, so, you know, I say go see it, especially because there ain't really shit else out right now anyway. And then I wanted to mention, Nye, did you watch Love and Hip Hop last night?
I didn't. Was it the season finale?
So, yeah, it was the finale.
So, you know, I came into this season late, and I started catching up because I saw this clip of Tahiri telling Sin about Joe, you know, I'm the ex.
Oh, yeah.
Sin was like, the fuck are you talking about? And I was like, the fuck is she talking about? So I had to catch up. And then, like, last week I was like, okay, I'm good. So, I mean, I may watch just to close out the season, but it's going to be entertainment. Love y'all. I'm like, okay.
But also piece the bone of me entertainment, because, and I mean, bro, I know you can't talk much about any of this, but you could chime on this one if I'm wrong. Peace to Bone to Me Entertainment for doing a own trick and a TV1 type of trick, which is, it's coming back, like, it was kind of like a mid-season ending.
Oh, okay.
So it's coming back. And then Atlanta starts next week, and then I think New York is coming back right after that again.
Okay, because yeah, I thought this felt like a short season.
Yeah.
You know what it was? It wasn't even the plot lines. I get that this was like, let's bring back the original Love and Hip Hop New York crew, which I very much appreciate. But Olivia and Samaya were a bridge too far for me, because both of them were boring as hell, in my opinion. And Olivia coming back, talk about Rich owing her money. I was just like, why? How are we still talking about Rich owing people, owing Olivia, who nobody has seen in how many
years? Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, there's really, like, so I don't know. And then Cisco's back. Like, I was I didn't need these ancillary motherfuckers over here. So
it was also Peace to Mon Ami Entertainment, because it was interesting. Like you said, they brought a lot of people back. But on the finale last night, a lot of the people, and even the last couple episodes, I should say, a lot of people they brought back also vanished.
Okay.
So Samaya wasn't on last night. Joe Budden wasn't on last night. Tahiri wasn't there on last night. So there's like a lot of people who like kind of were in a couple episodes but weren't there for the full season. Jim Jones wasn't on last night.
Right.
So it's kind of like they were there but not there. There's like a core that were there for most episodes, but there was a lot of the Peter Guns came back like last week and this week only. You know,
well, shout out to Monami for giving these niggas some change.
Yeah, God bless, man. Shit.
Because I was like, I was like, clearly Olivia's not doing anything. Clearly Samaya. I was like, where the fuck they even find Samaya? Like, clearly Samaya's not doing anything. Clearly Cisco's doing nothing, because I don't think Cisco ever did anything. And I'm still trying to figure out how Cisco got on the show in the first place ever.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll talk offline. Did Joe watch Real Housewives?
Yes.
You watch it, bro?
Yeah, I did. I watched it.
Okay. So this whole thing with Kenya and Mark announcing their separation, and you know, I guess impending divorce. I don't know if they actually haven't gone through it yet.
I think they're now finally going through it, because after, so just as a sidebar, a few weeks ago, maybe last month, she actually posted Mark on her Instagram playing with Brooklyn, and he was in Atlanta, and she said it was the day it snowed in Atlanta, and she was like, snow in Atlanta, anything is possible, but the anything is possible seemed to be referring to her and Mark. But after last week's episode, she actually took Daily off of her name on her Instagram account.
Okay, sister.
So it might be a wrap.
So it was revealed this week. And now you look backwards, it's not surprising that Mark allegedly has been cheating on Kenya with a girl in New York, which I always kind of suspected, because again, like, you have a newborn child and you're just kind of popping in and out. It's like with your wife,
Right.
You know, not, you know, a newborn child with anybody, should you should be part of their life and be involved. But, like, with a woman you're married to, you're still just kind of like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll come down in 2 weeks. Like, what? Like, nigga, right. What? Like, you know, and then like you've talked about on the show before, like, anytime that Kenya made any type of, you know, inquiry about them being intimate, he was just basically, like, disgusted. Like, ugh, get right. away. Which told me that,
like, yeah. Her.
He doesn't like her, and he not only does he not like her, but I my theory is not only does he not like her, but he really likes the woman in New York.
Right.
And so he's just like, I gotta do this shit for TV, but I'm gonna go on the show and make sure the woman in New York sees that I don't want anything to do with Kenya.
Well, I also have the feeling that, I have a couple theories. One of my theories is that Mark is one of those I don't watch reality TV niggas, right?
Yeah.
So I think that when
he I don't watch TV at all.
Yeah. You. So he was set up with Kenya. That part we know. I have a feeling that he was still thinking of the Kenya Moore that we knew Kenya as back when she was just like Miss Universe.
Yeah.
And she would do cameos here and there and be on and
videos and stuff. Yeah.
And did not know what her persona had been developed into on the reality TV front. And this mm-hmm. is not caping for Mark at all. I think once he realized what her brand was, he was turned off by that. And so he didn't want to be associated with that publicly. I think that's part of why he doesn't want to be on reality TV, because it doesn't help his business. They don't shoot in New York. It's not like he's at his restaurant. You know what I mean? Like,
he gets nothing out of it.
He gets nothing out of it. So then I think, secondly, I have a feeling that Kenya don't really put it down in the bedroom. I just have that feeling. Like, she might be like, don't pull my hair, don't do that thing, don't do that thing. Because, you know, they did make a reference to him being like, it's too rough, it's too hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And this other woman, since they apparently had a physical relationship based on Kenya's text, he's like getting it in.
Yeah, and the woman's like, even if you're married, you can still get this anytime you
want. Yeah, and I think his thing is like, yo, I'm not, and again, this is not caping for Mark, but it seems like him and Kenya also just have a difference. Like, Kenya might be on something like, I want you to make love to me. And he's like, I'm trying to bend it over the kitchen and get it out.
I'm trying to get it lit.
Yeah, so I think there's also that. But also, like I said, I just think he does not like Kenya. I'm sure he maybe did in the beginning. And I think he also really wanted, He's just a mean person. Like, my guess is that Mark might be a dick and an asshole in every facet of it. Like, we just don't know a lot about him to know that. But what I will say is that in this episode, as much as I do not think Kenya deserves the treatment from Mark at all, there is a part of an aspect of chickens coming home to roost here, because now she has to go on this trip with these girls that she helped organize, that she doesn't want to go on because she's been such a piece of shit to these women.
Yeah.
That she is.
She knows they're going to get
her back.
She has
her defenses up because she knows they can now take stabs at her
mm-hmm.
easily, mm-hmm. openly, mm-hmm. and she doesn't want to face it. And that part is her own doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, and she's also, she's attacked at one point or another, you know, a lot of their relationships.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It includes most recently with Tanya and Paul.
Yeah.
Like, she's constantly attacking their relationships. So, yeah, like, it is some chickens coming on the loose shit, even though it's said Mark is a complete dick. He's a complete dick. It's kind of like, yeah, like, you can't really expect to be. And on this episode, Cynthia asked Nene to kind of, you know, have a little sympathy for Kenya, which she's going through, and maybe she kind of talked to her because Nene's been through a lot with her and Greg. And I thought that, and I don't cut for Nene at all, but I thought Nene was very sincere in what she said. Like, I'm really sorry about this, and I really, if you do want to talk, like, I'm here for you. Like, I really, I'm, you know, upset that you are going through this. And Kenya just proceeded right away to diss her. I'm like,
I do not think it's Cynthia's place.
No, it's never Cynthia's place.
Cynthia always doing some shit. Like, mind your business. Like, it's absolutely not Cynthia's place to encourage Nene. Like, Cynthia encouraged Nene to do that.
Yeah, that wasn't her place.
That's not Cynthia's place to do.
Because it put, again, not that Kenya was, it was fucked up with how Kenya treated Nene. But maybe Kenya just wasn't ready to accept that from Nene because of stuff they've been through.
And also wondering if Nene's coming from a real place. Like, if Kenya,
exactly.
So my thing is, if Kenya suggested it to, I mean, if Cynthia was going to suggest it to NeNe, she also should have gone
said to Cynthia
and said,
yeah,
I think that NeNe might have some things to offer you. I think you guys should talk instead of putting NeNe on the spot. Because now you got NeNe in a point where NeNe's going to shut the fuck down.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what
absolutely.
I mean? Like, it's just Cynthia, just mind your business sometimes, boo. Like, come on.
Sidebar, and bro, I know you're about to jump in here, but just sidebar, just on some light shit. I really like Tanya and Portia together. They seem like just really like fun girls. They really like each other and they have a good time and they goofy.
They don't
want to jump in the pool because they're like about the same age and they're like.
Yeah, they don't want to talk about all that heavy shit. Like, honestly.
They want fun.
Portia will stay out of the drama if she can. Portia's just here for the shits and giggles if she can.
Yeah. And 10 years too.
Yeah.
And this, that's why they get along. They're like, yo, let's have a good time. Like, fuck it. Like, you know, we. Like, jump in the pool. Okay, we're going to split a room. Oh, shit, you got the better room. Oh, fuck. Like, but it ain't never no mean, deep shit. It's just like, right. Oh, girl, you got the better room. Oh, fuck it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
because first of all, that's who Tanya is. And even with Portia, as much as I will side eye Portia sometimes, Portia will only return energy that she gets. So, yes. It's like, because if it's love and light, you give Portia, Portia will give you love and light right back.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and Tanya really just, like, I heard, I don't know if this is true, I heard that Tanya has been extended, like, the full main character.
Let you look at a peach.
To hold the peach, and she turned it down.
I could actually see that, because you know what she's like, I don't want you guys going no deeper into my life than you already are. Because, you know.
I don't need the money, I'm good.
Yeah, she's good, because her dude makes a ton. And I'm saying?
And she does, too. She has,
she makes money, yeah.
She has a venture capitalist firm or some shit like that.
Yeah, I like her. But anyway, bro, go ahead. Jump on in here.
I mean, my sentiments are, you know, very much in line with what you guys said. Again, like I said before, Kenya is just not a sympathetic figure. And so there's let me say this. Even though we know Kenya has done all of those things to those people and their marriages and their relationships, I still don't take any glee in watching this. I don't feel.
Wait, you broke up. You said even though we know Kenya has done all of those things
in other people's relationships and sort of mentioned other things and, you know, been nasty in other people's relationships. I don't feel good or take any glee in watching her go through this. It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel good at all. It's really awkward and really uncomfortable. And I don't even know if they were really married to begin with.
You don't think so?
I think that. You know, blogs are really, really relentless in finding things like marriage certificates and marriage licenses. And
they've never found it?
They're usually public record. It's fairly easy to find. I think a lot of people have gone to those islands because I didn't like Eddie Murphy and Tracy Edmonds at one point do one of those.
But they said it was like a spiritual
ceremony. Yes.
But then they broke up immediately after they got back, which has always been interesting to me. I always wanted to know the backstory.
But my point is, I think a lot of those sort of those islands, you know, they do these ceremonies and they're not really official. They're not officially married. So I think it probably makes it easy to walk away. And it was probably easy to just get into this, right? Because I think they both probably looked at it as like, look, you know, this will be great for us for the show. I don't know what her timeline was. Maybe she was pregnant already. And was like, look, I don't want to be out here, you know, looking like I you know, a baby mama, right? Like I get the sense that she
I thought it was a deal for her to have a baby. Like I honestly wonder, because Kenya definitely I shouldn't say definitely, but I would bet a very large sum of money that Kenya did not get pregnant just by having sex. Like
because she's 49.
She was definitely
doing some in vitro and all that stuff.
Yeah, she was almost definitely going through in vitro. So my guess would be that I said this in the beginning that I felt like based on how quickly they got married, she and Mark, it was almost like a partnership. Not saying that I don't think like she wanted to have a marriage and she wanted this partnership to work, but I think it was like you look good on paper, I look good on paper. You're a business person, I'm a business person. We can make a power couple and I can have this kid. Are you down, and I'm pretty sure that was not through, we're just so blessed and surprised that we can see, because yeah. she was about to go through it with the stupid young boy, the trainer.
Oh, Matt.
She was on hormone injections and the whole shit already. There was a point where she looked like she had gained weight, and people suspected that she was pregnant, and I think that was just her prepping. Because as soon as you start taking all the hormone supplements and stuff, you do start looking like you're pregnant. But so she was already in this mode. I feel like she and Mark, like, I feel like it was a brokered deal to have a baby, and then like Mark realized he ain't like her.
Yeah, it's too late. So this is, again, it's been, you know, like Sean says, even with all the things that King has done to people in the past, which have been horrible, now no sugarcoating. She's done some horrible, horrible shit. When she, to Marlo, when she most abandoned, just terrible shit. But even with all that being said, like, to watch her just kind of be abused by this guy is really uncomfortable to watch. It seems to get worse every week. I can't even, if he shows up, I can't even imagine what this reunion is going to be like.
Right.
It's going to be bonkers.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think he's going to come. I really don't think, because I don't think he's
going to. That's what I said, if he shows up.
Yeah, I don't think he's contractually obligated to come. And clearly, like, Mark does not want to be part of this shit. Like, yeah. at all. In any way, shape,
form, fashion. But if he does come, he's going to get grilled by Andy. Like, yeah. What's good? They go, like, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? So, we'll know. We'll see. Let's talk about, I guess all of this is, well, you know what, before we jump into the, because the next thing is going to be like six things that kind of under one umbrella, let's talk about the baby, right? You want to take this one? Because I think you have some opinions about this cat.
Well, so the baby has been videotaped. And what appears to be him slapping a young woman at a concert. Yeah. There are also other reports that he slapped the phone. And apparently he put out a $10,000 reward for anyone that had a better angle showing that he didn't slap this woman, this young woman, mm-hmm. at the concert. And, you know, my thing is, I like the baby. I like his energy. I like, you know, that he seems to have brought back having fun without being a square in hip hop.
Yeah.
But
giving a real show. You know?
Yes. But we're at the point now where this is, you know, these instances of him and like, this is far too frequent. For my taste.
Say every month it feels like it's something.
And at some point we have to acknowledge that you and your people are the common denominator here. And that
every time.
And that this can't continuously be an outlier. Like, when it's the seventh time, it's not an outlier, right? Like, there's a pattern exactly. here. There's a pattern here. And, you know, we've talked about security and what their job is, and it's very obvious that their job is to protect you from people outside. But like, mm-hmm. I've always said to you guys, the biggest part of security when you're doing personal bodyguard work is that you're also there to protect those artists from themselves.
Yes.
Your job is to ensure that they are not doing shit like this.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I haven't been at those sorts of clubs in a very long time.
Right.
It's been, you know, I'd probably say 20 years, you know, yeah. 20 plus years since I've been to clubs like that. But one of the things you do as a bodyguard when you go to those clubs is that you actually have club security that you should be directing. And this is what I kind of spoke about last time with Joe, like, use those people, use those underlings, like, clear that path. You know, I've talked about this before, moving with a purpose. Like, right. when you're lollygagging and tap dancing, and God bless, that's the dude who was out there with Big that night said the same thing. They came out of that spot. They were kind of lingering around. They were not moving with a clear purpose.
Yeah.
That shit is important, man.
You got to be going somewhere. You can't just be chilling.
Yeah, man. Or that's going to come around. People are going to do that sort of stuff to you. People are going to, you know, especially now with the way social media is, because, you know, prior to this, you only got artists from the source and from being at radio stations. You know, maybe XXL or whatever, right? Like, you didn't have the level of access that you have now. So there's a level of intimacy that these fans have with artists.
Yeah, via social media.
They feel entitled to their space.
They feel like they know them.
They feel like they know them. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there's, you know, and I don't know exactly what that young lady did. It did appear that she did something. I don't know if she touched him or whatever she did. It didn't seem to have needed that level of reaction.
That's my point. It shouldn't have been that, bro. Yeah.
And that's just me at this point giving him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't slap her, but like slap the phone. Yeah. I don't know exactly what happened, but it appears that he slapped her.
He did.
And then after, I think it was that same concert, shit goes left with the promoters in the back. There's shots fired. Somebody gets shot. It's like, what, yo, man. What are we doing? Like, you're at the cusp of really being special and separating yourself from the pack.
Yeah.
And you keep putting yourself in these positions to where, you know, you're just like, we're hearing more about this sort of shit than we hear in music.
Exactly. Yeah. It's nonstop with this guy. It's like every few weeks, it's like, you know, the baby was at a show and swung on somebody, or the baby's bodyguard knocked somebody out, or the baby, you know, beat up
entourage
the promoter.
Didn't they pull some guy out of a car not even 2 months ago,
probably
pulled him out of a car,
the promoter guy, beat him up and took his phone and took money, ripped him. And people filming this shit too. It's like, dude, like, that's the other thing. It's like, dude, you are who you are now, so you're not going to be able to do any of these things on the low. You know, so as soon as you come around, cameras is going up and everything he does is always on film. It's like, dude, they got to figure out another way, because one of these times, he's gonna do something and end up back in jail. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's
I really want to see him win. I want to see him win. I don't think he's a bad dude. But what I do think is that this is why it's important to have experienced people traveling with you. Yeah. To have a manager that sits in an office that can make phone calls and get you on these shows, that's all great. But if the people that are on the ground, boots on the ground, your road manager, the people that are out there, you know, traveling with you, if that crew ain't tight, if that ship ain't running smooth, it's hell to pay, man.
Always.
It's hell to pay.
It's going to be nonstop drama. Real quick, Megan Thee Stallion, we talked about her last week. She put her project out, Sugar, last Friday. It was an EP. The sales numbers look like she's going to do about like 30, 35K first week. Not a big fan of the project, to be honest.
It's still not an album proper.
No, it's definitely not an album proper. It's an EP. But my thing was like, I don't know. Again, I'm also going with the background, but I don't know why she fought so hard to put that out.
I think she just needed something in the streets. Like, she actually said something like, I gotta keep new music out there, because she hasn't put anything out since what, last summer, last spring.
The one that had Hot Girl Summer stuff on.
Yeah, I think her thing was just more like
Tina Snow. That was it.
The Tina Snow joint. I think for her it was just like, I have to get some new music out there.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is this though, and I don't know, I'm not mad at the getting some new music out there though, but like, I just feel like a lot of these young artists, you know, her included, and this is not, you know, guys, girls, it ain't about her being a woman. I just feel like even when you do that, like, you still have to try to make sure the quality is high. Like that's the problem. It's like, even if you want to put that, like, just a quote-unquote mixtape out, make sure that mixtape has got some shit on it. Like, don't be, like, putting it out just to be putting it out. But I've been listening to her. I don't feel like she's being A&R'd. I don't feel like she's being even produced. I think she's doing the thing that a lot of the young ones do, which is like getting beats emailed, going into some little studio, even in her house or whatever, and knocking some shit out and saying it's done. And people are just like, they're just like, okay, bet, sounds good to me. And they just throw it out there. That's kind of what it sounded like to me. you know?
Yeah, my opinion on the record was I wasn't a fan of it. It sounded dated, and it sounded amateurish, in my opinion. I think that you're right, Jeff. I think that it's not necessarily being A&R'd, but also I think what would do her justice is finding her producer. Like, yeah. finding that person that's going to sort of, you know, being the Swiss to DMX or whatever, you know, like finding that perfect marriage. And that's not an easy thing now, right? Because everyone, you know, everyone is doing beats. Everyone is making beats. Everyone is sending beats, right? And sometimes you have to find that marriage, and you have to know what direction you're going in. To throw spaghetti on the wall at this stage in her career, I think is probably not a good idea. And to be honest, when you look at the amount of material that she is putting out, and you know, kind of as, I mean, listen, we can call them mixtape. We're calling them all of this shit based on technicalities, okay? She's releasing projects. There's artwork.
Yes.
There are videos. There are visuals attached to this. This is not... Yes. This is not a mixtape in the traditional sense of a mixtape. And,
exactly.
And we're talking about almost 35 songs that have been released that aren't going against her deal.
Yeah, that's another thing.
None of this gets applied. None of this matters. So you're basically giving material away for free, and basically you're keeping your clock going.
Yep.
And
yep.
So I don't know. I, to me, it sounded to me like, again, no one really kind of heard, because I don't know that you could listen to this album and say, oh, she's got at least a single that's going to be out of here. Yeah. Like nothing on that album registers or resonates in any way. And you can look at the reaction. People fuck with her and people like her, and she's a likable person.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no one is discussing this album. No one.
It was like everybody had so much to say when her, you know, contract stuff came out, and people were online acting like they had graduated from fucking, you know, had entertainment law degrees and shit left and right. But then when the project came out, everybody's fucking, it's crickets.
Well,
it's fucking crickets. Her shit didn't even trend, B. Her shit didn't even trend when it came out. But everybody and their grandmother had some shit to say literally 2 or 3 days before that.
I think this is, you know, listen, I think she's still in a learning phase. She's a 25-year-old artist. She's, you know, she's got to figure out. She doesn't get another one of these, is my point.
No.
She doesn't get another one of these.
No.
Her next project needs to be a real album. And it needs to be done in a real way. It needs to be rolled out in a real way. And it needs to be produced by real producers. People understand, to say, that don't really go right there. You probably need to change a word or two. Take a syllable off here, because it's, you know, there's parts of this, just like you said, Jeff, it sounded like she went in the booth and was kind of left to her own devices, right? Like she just was kind of on her own.
Doing her thing. Yeah. Before we jump into Corona, because there's a couple levels to that, and there's a very recent, like literally some shit that just happened. I don't know if y'all saw it yet. I mentioned it to you. I just want to say, look, the we talked about this too with Reagan. Peace to Cousin Reagan. We loved having you on last week. We talked about Bernie and Joe and the Democratic. That was Super Tuesday. Was last week. It's just still blowing my mind how many people are like online that don't really, that are just talking out their ass, man. Like niggas just don't have, and I'm not saying you should vote for this one or that one, but some of the reasons that people are kind of going for Bernie over Joe is like, really? That's not even true. Like niggas are saying shit that ain't even true. It's like, and then KMG Kells, she said some interesting shit too. She said it came out that in Super Tuesday, only 13% of the registered voters voted. So basically, like, all these niggas online talking shit, they didn't even vote.
Well, also, and the youth, the youngest.
That's what I mean, the young ones.
Yeah, was it 18 to 29 segment?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. What was funny to me was that on Wednesday morning, people, I can't remember what day we taped with Reagan, so I may have brought this up, but people were complaining that the older voting bloc, which is the most consistent voting bloc ever, actually showed up to vote just because they voted Biden. And it's like, it's the most consistent vote. Because here's the thing, at 18 or 29, and I can say this even now from personal experience, talking to people in this age group, you like the idea of politics in theory. Like, yeah, you dip your toe in the water.
But ain't nobody trying to get their hands dirty.
But if you're still, well, first of all, if you're still covered under your parents' insurance, if you aren't yet really, like, paying for real taxes out this motherfucker, like, if you're not, like, if these policies and stuff don't affect you immediately right now, you actually just aren't as motivated to go vote for certain reasons, right? Like, I remember when the Trump stuff was coming up, like, I was acutely concerned about my health care. I was concerned about my mother's retirement. I was concerned, you know what I mean? Like, so you, like, you have to think, I think, be in a position where this stuff is going to affect you immediately to go vote. That should not be the case. You should be voting for your future.
Yes.
But I just think you're invested on a different level once you're like, oh, my, this is going to affect my pockets immediately in the next year, right? So, but for me, the idea, like, I saw somebody say, well, how is Biden, if you could tell me how Biden's going to inspire the young vote, then I'll shut up. And I'm like, I think, Sean, you saw that thread. It was like, how is Biden going to encourage the young voter? And I'm like, Bernie ain't even get the young voter out. The fuck you talking about? You know what I mean? So it's like, the person who had the policies to attract young people, which, by the way, I get why you're attracted to Bernie's policies. I still don't understand how he's going to put them in action.
Because niggas want shit for free.
Right. The person who actually had the policies that's supposed to attract the young voter could not get the young voter out.
At all.
So now the fact that you want to say, well, how is Biden going to get the young voter out? Nigga, how was Bernie going to get the young
Exactly. voter out? And the thing about the Bernie shit is, it blows my mind. It's like, yo, like, it's just pull back and just really watch his get down. Like, he ain't never done nothing to no black people. He marched with King 50 years ago. He supported Jesse Jackson in, what, in 88 or 84?
He voted for the crime bill.
Like, but also people think, like, he lives in literally the white, one of the top, maybe top, I know top three, whitest states in the union. Vermont is 96%
black
white
population, but like 70-something percent black incarceration rate.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm like, what do y'all, why y'all think this dude's gonna hold? Like, what are y'all thinking here? I just don't get what people... I just don't get it. What you got to say, bro?
Not much. I think that young people are using their voice in the most backward way, and so this is a very young thing, right? And what happens when you're young is that you literally center yourself. There's no everything is centered on you and right now.
And the six people that you hang out with.
There is no forethought. There is no idea. And in that thread, you know, someone said something. Actually, Jeffrey Wright, the actor, said something that I've always been saying. Like, how about, here's what's at stake? Okay, your daughter getting a back alley abortion. How about that? How about maybe that's at stake? Right? Yeah. Like, no one is like. How long y'all think RBG is gonna hang around?
Right. Okay,
exactly.
Okay, exactly. And what's gonna happen is you've got two other Republican justices that are pushing 80, if not 80 now.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get another term, dude, guess what's gonna happen? Somebody's gonna go to those judges and they're gonna say, "Look, man, we need you to retire." Right.
So we can have this swing.
And they go swing that fucking court. That's not even to mention the federal appointed judges.
They've already been court packing this entire 4 years.
At record pace.
With like 40-year-olds for lifetime payments.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think what I'm finding frustrating is, like, listen, support who you support, obviously.
Yeah. What else?
But now, all of a sudden, liberals who are taking the stance of we have to get Trump out by any means necessary are being criticized and called centrists. Like, I'm not a centrist because I just want to get Trump out of office more than anything else. That does not make me a centrist. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is, and this is not, you know, people would now hit me with the quote unquote okay boomer, which first of all, y'all done totally taken the word boomer and turned it into some really ridiculous shit. But anyway, like okay boomer is not really the insult that people think it is. But at any rate, my thing is for people who voted for the first time for Obama, I think there is like a people who voted for the first time for Obama or after Obama have a very different view of what the presidential election is supposed to look like.
Yep.
Like
how I've been saying that.
Are you than those of us who have before. And mate, listen, maybe in a perfect world, you would feel extremely passionate about the candidate you're voting for. You would feel in your bones that they absolutely represent everything that you need them to represent. You would, but that is, the Obama election was an anomaly.
He was an outlier. Yeah,
I don't think the country had seen anything like that in modern democracy maybe since JFK. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there had been that kind of fervor and groundswell around a candidate in quite some time. I voted for John Kerry, who was like as interesting as a can of paint, but like I was voting against Bush. And I don't think it's a problem to vote against the bad guy instead of for the good guy. Like there's now this concept, like that's not an okay thing, but that's kind of the way this country's political system works. Is it flawed? 100%. But we don't start talking about the fact that people don't start talking about how to fix that until we're in an election season bothers me immensely. Like in the three off years, we don't hear nothing about that. But then all of a sudden, when it's time to go to the polls, it's like third party this and fraud, you know, system that.
Everybody's complaining and shit.
Yeah. And that's my problem. There's a lot of complaining and not a lot of solution.
Yes. Well, I'm also not a fan. Listen, I think you should find the candidate that you want to win and that is speaking to you. And I think you should stand on their policies and what they mean. I think when you get into trying to drag down the opposition, it really kind of looks whack because the person that you're putting on this pedestal is also a flawed candidate, right?
Like everybody is.
They're all flawed because they've all been around for a very long time, and we can pick apart everything. Okay, nobody is ignoring what Biden did with Anita Hill. Okay, nobody's ignoring his hand in the fucking crime bill. Okay, but and guess what, man? Nobody should be ignoring Bernie's hand in the crime bill or the fact that he's never really been able to accomplish anything in all of these years.
Ever, and he has like this is what I keep bringing up to people who are like, do your research on Bernie. I did my research on Bernie. Bernie has like one of the highest absentee roll call records in Senate, meaning he wasn't there for votes. He's gotten like the least, like he has a dismal record for actually getting any kind of legislature passed, for actually sponsoring, not co-sponsoring, but for actually introducing and sponsoring legislature. Like it's like he's really just, he doesn't play well with others, and he's divisive. Like he is divisive. He is not.
They just had a fight. Some guys just rushed. His people just rushed a Biden rally last night. Simone Sanders got hit in the head with an iPad. Like it was fighting in there. Like he's a lot of his ways or his supporters' ways anyway are Trump. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's like if we can't get our way, we're gonna burn the whole shit. If we can't get our way, we burn the whole shit down.
And I think too, and I don't believe for one second when they initially talked about the DNC being corrupt and trying to lead Biden and take this election away from Bernie, when Trump says that, he's sowing that seed. He's planting the seed. He's giving
that alone to give people pause.
Yes, and giving Bernie the out. He's giving them the out. Yep. And my issue is like, yo, we're still in the primary, but like, dude, if Joe Biden wins the primary, right? Or if Bernie Sanders wins the primary, like you mean to tell me that you're so against those guys that you would jeopardize the next 4 years of the presidency.
The Bernie
with some sort of anger vote. Like what did that get us in 2016? It got us two more fucking conservative judges appointed. That's what it got us. It got us in one of the worst economic collapses in the last shit since 2008.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like,
yeah.
We're dealing with fucking kids in cages. People are getting their homes run up into. Like, and because someone says they're not going to abolish ICE, then you're just not going. I mean, dude, like, ICE has existed. We know that the implementation. We know that those resources and how they're being applied here and the tactics that are being used are terrible and should be corrected and should be addressed. No one's saying that. But like, if you're not on the side of you got to abolish this one thing that's affecting only my family, well, not only my family, but it's affecting me personally, then I'm not fucking with nobody. Fuck your healthcare. Right.
Yeah,
fuck the world. Fuck everything else because I'm not getting what I wanted to get.
Because you didn't vote for the one thing I like. Exactly.
I think the other problem is that, and I said this with Hillary, there is no person or no family who can, if you've been in politics for 40 years, there's going to be some shit now. There's going to be some shit that you did then that people disagree with now, right? But like also politics, social norms, social viewpoint, things evolve, right? The reason Bernie doesn't have a whole lot of problematic shit in the last 30 years to bring up is because Bernie didn't do shit.
He ain't done shit.
He wasn't doing shit.
He's been coasting. He's been coasting like a motherfucker.
Biden has always been a very visible lawmaker and politician. So there is no such thing as being in any career this long, any career, and not having made some decisions along the way that now with better knowledge, with evolution of thought, with evolution of groupthink even, don't look a little unsavory. It's impossible.
They're both flawed candidates.
Absolutely.
And guess what? One of them will win the DNC, right? Like, exactly. One of them is going to get the nomination. So, look, you could stand on your fucking high horse and this is exactly why and what you see now is you see a quiet Republican side. Okay.
Yep.
They're going to let all of this infighting take place. Okay. And they're going to stack their chips and stack their war chests and get their ducks in a row. And they're going to come out fucking swinging. And meanwhile, we're going to be so exhausted.
Yeah.
From this shit.
Fighting.
Yeah. The DNCs, they're going to be, looking crazy. Going to be looking like fucking Deontay Wilder out there.
Yeah, exactly. On wobbly legs and shit, you know? So I just wanted to mention that. The last thing we've talked about this for, like, I guess, like, at least 3 weeks in a row, but this coronavirus thing just keeps getting, bigger. So I don't know if while we're taping, it popped up on my phone that Governor Cuomo just sent the National Guard to New Rochelle. To try to keep...
I was waiting for that to happen.
Yeah.
I was waiting for them to basically quarantine Westchester.
Quarantine New Rochelle right now. So that's crazy. Like, crazy. Harvard shut down school and sent gave students 5 days to pack all their things, move out, and go home. But a lot of people in Harvard can't go home. A lot of them are foreign students. They live, in different places around the world. They just across the country. Maybe they just don't have, maybe people on scholarships and don't have, like, the funds just sitting there to fly back to wherever they're from. And they're not really providing no guidance or right now or what to do with the students that can't just go home. I saw on the news last night, Fulton County, which is the biggest, basically Atlanta, they closed their schools down. It's over until further notice. South by Southwest canceled. Coachella moved to October for now. And all of that.
The whole country of Italy is on lockdown.
Yeah, the whole country of Italy is on lock. Like, nobody coming in and out of Italy. They showing pictures. There's nobody on the streets. Up in Seattle, the same thing. Like, the streets are basically empty because I think they've had like 22, 23 deaths in Washington State alone. So, like, people up in Seattle is, like, not coming outside and all that. I don't want to say it pales in comparison because it doesn't, but all this is affecting the stock market, which took one of the worst dives ever 2 days ago. Or was it yesterday? Yesterday. I'm tripping. Yesterday.
It
went off a cliff, 2,000 points down. It was going down so fast that the stock market, and I didn't realize this, the stock market actually has a breaker system. if things are going down too fast, it'll automatically halt trading. And
that happened for like 30 minutes, I think.
Yeah, for like 30 minutes. It like, I don't know how many times it's happened in the past, but like once or twice, like it doesn't happen. So for that to happen was like, whoa. Like it actually like, nah, y'all niggas got to stop trading because all the money about to go away. So, of course, the White House has been as incompetent as with this as with anything else. You got Trump tweeting about, it's just going to go away. There's no test. There's not anywhere near enough testing kits. They don't know to do with a ship with several coronavirus people, you know, what's it called? Identified with coronavirus. I forget what that ship docked.
Since San Francisco.
San Francisco, yeah. But they don't know how they're going to get the people off and what they're going to do with the people who are quarantined, you know, how to quarantine people, that are going to let them fly home. Like, it's just, and that's just a few things of the many, many things that's going on with this, man. And again, a lot of misinformation going out too, because I've talked to a couple people, it's like, yo, it ain't even that bad. It's just like the flu. I'm like, no. It's not like the flu, because unlike the flu, there is no vaccination for the coronavirus. Like, if you get it, like, God bless, you know, it doesn't mean you automatically will die or it automatically will, you know, will knock you off the cliff, but they don't really know what it's going to do to you, which is why they quarantine people. Because they don't know what, and as happens with any virus, the longer it's out there, it mutates and gets stronger. And so you don't know what it's going to do if you get it. So
I mean, it's been mostly impactful to the older generation and people.
Older people who have
compromised immune systems. Yes. The mortality rate is fairly low in consideration, and I'm not saying that as a way to, you know, dismiss it, right? Because I don't fucking want to get it, right? And I would consider myself young and healthy, but I think that, you know, we've had these sort of issues and we've seen this sort of thing before. Obviously, this is bigger than, you know, SARS and bird flu and all of that sort of shit. And I think that that's because, you know, again, international travel and how people interact is very, very different now. You know, you look at a place like like Austin, man. They made a decision to cancel a conference that is a $356 million impact just to the town.
Just to the town.
Yeah.
That is a massive amount of money
to a town, and Austin's not that big. It's not Houston or Dallas, so money going in Austin means a lot.
And when you are mom and pop, when you're a mom and pop operation, this is make or break me season.
Yes, to make a year.
Yes, this is the make or break me season for you guys. So I think that the impact here has been it's growing. I think that we're at a crossroad of legitimate concern and fear and oversaturation of fear and people being a little extra, in my opinion. But look, you kind of called this, Jeff. I don't want to, you know, you called this early. I was like, you know, them niggas ain't, you know.
Y'all be all right.
Y'all be all right. And then get your sleeve of saltines, nigga.
Yeah, it's a Roman
tussle. And quit all that moving. You be all right.
Go get you some of that ginger ale and lay down.
Yeah. And so we realized, okay, that doesn't work. But we had a concern. You know, Jordan was telling me in school, like, you know, they had a little incident, like, because one of the kids that was Asian coughed in class. And, you know, fucking teenagers are being teenagers. Yeah, and then there was a rumor that there was, you know, dude, like I got an email from the superintendent. Like, that's how quickly it rose to, you know, people are concerned. Like, people are really concerned. You know, Justin, he was just telling me, like, I got to bring my laptop home, my work computer home every day, because I don't, they might tell me, you know, start working from home.
Yeah. It might shift offices.
When I'm done here, I got to call the West Coast office. We got to come up with a contingency plan on what to do. We don't have, like, our editors can't work from home.
Right.
Ain't nobody got that equipment in the crib.
It's right. Not even just that equipment. Like, the way the system works is that that stuff can't just be exposed and out. Like,
I got you.
Like, you have to be able to access it from certain places. So I got to make sure, like, if there are people who can work from home, what is that list like? Does it impact production? How are we able to give people remote access? How are we able to, you know, but listen, God bless, for the most part, most people are able to do that. That's not a big deal, but I still got to consider, you know, shit, am I going to be reimbursing internet charges? How long is this for? Right. You know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, well, I think that's the hard part, Sean, like, the what does that mean in terms of, like, the business impact. I think what's the most challenging about the coronavirus, aside from the obvious health concerns, because to both of y'all's point, if you get it, you're not necessarily going to die, but it is highly, highly contagious. And we don't know how it evolves, right? So I already know a few people who thought they had the flu a few weeks ago and who are now suspecting that they might have actually had
the coronavirus
because it was a more serious flu than they'd ever experienced before, but they're fine now, right?
Yeah.
But with that said, I think the other thing is, like, this is uncharted territory for everybody. We're at the very beginning of festival and con season, which on the events and entertainment front is throwing everybody into a tailspin.
Now, what if the Met Ball is going to be canceled?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. And, like, on the, and you can't wait but so long to cancel these things, right? Like, Coachella had to start now if they wanted to move to October. We just really don't know what it's going to look like. Like, even on my front, I'm worried about my client and even my own, like, money over the next couple of months, because I have a couple of dates that a client has coming up for performances, and I'm like, if this shit gets canceled, not only does she lose money, I lose money. You know what I mean? So it's like, what does my shit look like? You know, so it's really, I'm supposed to be on a press trip this weekend, leave Thursday morning. I'm waiting for these niggas to be like, we not doing it. You know, so it's really hard. It leaves you in a lot of flux, a lot of limbo. And on the more serious front, like, for example, there are New York City schools who announced that they can't close or they don't want to close because they have such a high population of homeless students who won't have a place to go, won't have a place to eat. Yeah, it just shows, like, how quickly there's, like, a domino effect for something like this to just totally throw everything into chaos.
Yeah, it's. I saw we were talking before we started. Now, you hadn't jumped on yet. That the Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the National Hockey League, and Major League Soccer have banned reporters from coming into the locker rooms and the clubhouses starting today, again, because people don't want people coming in and out of places and possibly exposing players and the staff and the teams to, you know, corona, because, like you said, it's super contagious. Cuomo's also had a press conference yesterday. And him and de Blasio, I don't have, not together separately. And there's no way for this to work, but they're basically telling people to try not to take the subway and mass transit, which is impossible in New York, because it's still too cold to ride bikes. And nobody's riding bikes to work from fucking Queens. You know what I'm saying? And what's the alternative if you live in Manhattan to taking the subway? It's taking the bus, which is just as bad. It's not worse.
And here's the other kicker. The people who can actually afford to work from home that work in the city, the executive level people, people who have the financial stability, who have the remote access, you know, those are the people that, you know, aren't really going to be impacted with that sort of stuff. We're talking about service people, people who, if you don't come to work, you don't get paid.
Don't get paid.
You don't eat.
Exactly.
Right. And you don't have this abundance of remote. You can't do remote access, and you don't have this abundance of people.
Can't do your gig. You can't do your gig.
You live. Yeah, people, yes.
You know.
So that's going to be.
My girl works for the city. So, like, we were talking about it yesterday. You know, like you said, the city people. You know, any city agency, like, it's just what Sean said. If you don't go, you might have a couple of, like, little sick days or, you know, a personal day here. But basically, if you don't go, you don't get paid. And they don't have most of the city agencies, like you said, can't really access their shit from the crib like that.
Yeah, I mean,
so you can't work. You know, yeah, it's like light stuff. You can't really get busy, like for real. They're not set up to do like Zoom and Skyping. Like, it's just not New York anyway. It's not modernized like that, where you can work from home and still do meetings.
Well, also in fairness, even some of these places that are modernized that can do that, the reason you don't have that is because the more people with that level of access, the more compromised your information is, right?
Absolutely.
The more susceptible you are to hacks and invasions and intruders. You know what I'm saying? The last thing you need is a fucking email trail from, you know, Port Authority people.
Yeah.
Who actually, the president of Port Authority actually got...
He got Corona, that, right?
Yeah, he got Corona. But like I said, you know...
I totally missed it.
Yeah, the president of Port Authority got Corona. Yeah, it came out yesterday.
But I think it's fair enough to say, okay, that the executive of the Port Authority is not at the Port Authority station. Okay, he's not on the A-train. Right.
Yeah,
I'm sure of that.
He ain't on the bus going to Hackensack.
And he's not dealing with the common folk. Okay,
like exactly. So this is it's intense. And you know, the bottom line is, yes, this thing came, you know, has come around the world. I don't just say came here, but in many places it's spreading like wildfire, and people were definitely caught off guard. But the way that this Trump administration is treating it is not helping, because he was literally on some like, I just chilling, let's see if it just goes away, while, you know, it's spreading from state to state. And now they're trying to play catch up, but, you know, so there's that 26.
I bet you that goddamn Mar-a-Lago quarantine though.
Yep. All his properties is quarantined. So, wow. Unbelievable. So, yes, y'all stay safe out there. If you can work from home, do so. If you can't, you know, I say be safe, but like wearing masks and all that shit apparently doesn't work. So I don't really know. I mean,
masks are really, and they keep saying this and they've been saying this, the masks were not meant to in any way neutralize the virus. It was more because the easiest way for you to pick it up is from you touching something that's contaminated, and then without thinking, touch your face, right?
Which is why I tell people to wash your hands, you know. All
right.
That.
It was more, the masks were supposed to be more about keeping you from coming in contact, you know, because you're going to breathe the virus through the mask unless you have on like some filtration mask.
Yeah.
But now, like, the problem is, as always, people go into hoarding mode. So people are hoarding masks. People are hoarding toilet paper, people.
Hand sanitizer.
I saw one person on Twitter say that they were trying to buy alcohol swab, the prep pads that you need to give yourself an injection, and that they were sold out on Amazon because people were hoarding those because they want something with alcohol on it. And it's like, that's not what you need. Just fucking buy some soap and wash your hands. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's like people are going into overdrive, and now people who actually need medical supplies are like finding themselves facing shortages and stuff that they actually need to live.
Yeah.
So it's all just, it's all very problematic in terms of like, but it also proves that like, we don't know how to prep for emergency situations.
At all.
We have no idea what to do.
We just out here.
Out here.
Yeah, I'm supposed to go to dinner with my boss, my old boss tonight. I'm like,
you know that Corona's, man.
That Corona. I'm gonna go and stay uptown. I'll catch you on the
next trip. Because I was thinking about that, eating out, food service.
Yeah, dead ass. Dead ass. Like, you know, the place we usually go to is a really nice place. It's called Milos. I'm sure you guys know it. And it's a big open air restaurant. Shit, man. I'm shook. So I want to say stay safe out there, and please keep your eyes on the news and keep your eyes on your 401ks, because your shit in the toilet right now. And on that note,
we're
gonna wrap it up. Peace to LeBron. They've been busting ass the past. Last week, beat Milwaukee, beat the Clippers on Sunday. I really enjoy watching the Lakers this year. Like, they're just a really fun team to watch, man.
Yeah. They look good. So
they look good. The playoffs are going to be dope. So that's it, and we see y'all next week.
Peace. Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.